Doctor, my eyes have seen the years and the slow parade of fears without crying. Now I want to understand. I have done all that I could to see the evil and the good without hiding. You must help me if you can. Doctor, my eyes.
All right, Dr. G.C. Dillsaver, can you help them if you can?
I like to focus a laser on him. Oh, but excuse me. You said focus like a laser. I like to focus a laser. But let's not go there. But listen, yeah, this is demonic. Obviously, there's nothing that's not had to do with, he's not sick. That's not the proper term. He's evil.
Right.
And there's a phenomenon throughout history where former Catholics, apostates like he is, and so many Catholics that are in governmental power, worship the state, and they are the most egregious of apparatchiks and agents of the devil. They have to worship something, and they worship the state. And that's why we continue to tell Catholics and Christians to relocate, to decentralize in all aspects of our lives, and even ecclesially, but to relocate, to pull your consent away from the federal government, even the state government. You know, and we're not here to, you know, we're not trying to overthrow the system, because at this point, you know, just accept the fact there's not going to be any social reign of Christ politically on the governmental level. He's going to reign in our hearts and in our families. And the way you do that is by taking responsibility. Quite the opposite of what that evil man just said. We take responsibility for our families. And again, I say those fathers have to do that. They have to take full responsibility, full accountability for that family to be these kings. This is the key to a restoration of a new Christendom. Dedication and devotion to that wife in that home, very practically, and leading those children. We have to, as we're developing here, create this new Christendom in the domestic level. And that's why, and you see, you know, Mike, all of this is integrated, you know, in all my work in the last 25 years. Why last time, you know, you mentioned that we had this, kind of a storm brew when I was talking about the Mass and how we're not good Catholics who go to Mass, but we're go to Mass so we can be good Catholics. See, because what that does is it says it's relocating the Christian life to the domestic scene. It's not going to happen in the parish. It happens in the home. That's where the battle takes place. That's where the crucifixion takes place. That's where the purgation and sanctification takes place. So we don't have to worry about Pope Frank, as we affectionately call him here in America.
Affectionately. As affectionately as we can.
Yes. I'm not worried about what he just tweeted. It's not an issue. There's no crisis in the church. There's a crucialism, right? I mean, we start off crucial Christianity with that saying. There's no crisis in the church. The church is fine. We know exactly what the issue is. Pope Frank, you know, there's no crisis in the Mass. The Mass is fine. Why are you attacking the church? That's absurd. The same thing Vatican II did. There's no problem in the Mass. There's a Mass, not the problem with the Mass or with the church, with the doctrine. It's all clear. The problem is, the crisis is between the church and the world. And who's between the church and the world? It's the families. And so who's responsible to man those ramparts? It's the fathers, who are the leaders of Christian manhood. So that's where we are. And that's why I spoke about this last week. And I have this is in Crucial Christianity. I want to, you know, just tell your readers where they can address this issue. It's addressed chapter 14.
And by the way, we have the book. You got them all fired up last week. We sold almost all our copies. Two left. Crucial Christianity is at shop.mikechurch.com. That's shop.mikechurch.com.
And you can also, you know, on all my works on dillsaver.org. It's just kind of there. You can find out from newchristendom.org to psychomoralytics. And, you know, and it's all one piece. And can I want to say something about that, too. With Crucial Christianity, if you notice, we can segue out in anything, because It's an integral work, a unified theory, if you will, and it all fits. And I have intellectuals read it, and even intellectuals, though, because they can't, they compartmentalize. All they can do is take sound bites. They're not used to seeing a unified theory. But that's something that only Catholicism can do. It's unified. It's all one piece. All truth fits together. There's no contradiction there. So that's what Christianity espouses. Again, it espouses psychomoralytics. It espouses, you know, the patriarchy. It espouses social political truths. So, but this is chapter 14 is entitled "The Holy Mass and Blessed Sacrament." There's an entire chapter there. And now, if you don't mind, I'd like to, if we can go ahead and sit down, and I'll read an excerpt from that. But go ahead and mention your questions you hear.
No, I was going to say I was on a podcast yesterday. You'll like this, with G. Edward Griffin, Dan Happel, and a doctor lady. Her name is Juliette Engel. And at the end of my little segment, I mentioned, because we were talking about all this, and I said, look, it all comes down to this. Restoring the family in the home, and men have to lead. This is, and I said, I pointed at the camera, it was on a Zoom call, and I said, gentlemen, this is on you. This is on you. You must lead. I said, yes. We're all about, you know, on the red pill, I'm the MC of a red pill expo coming up here in Lafayette, Louisiana. And I was honored by, I was asked by Dr. G. Edward Griffin. So you know, it's kind of a thrill for me. And I've had a couple of conversations with him. The guy, the way his mind works about politics and stuff, I wish my brain worked like that. But we were having this conversation after Mr. Griffin had to leave, between me and Miss Engel and Dan Happel, and the subject came up, and all I did was channel you. And I said, yes, we're all for red-pilling men, and then to understand it's about your individual liberty. True, the individual is autonomous and sovereign. True. Well, what does he do with that autonomy and that sovereignty? If he doesn't use it in the home, I said, the best form of government is the one that you have in your house. This is where children are to learn government, from mom and dad and the family. You know, Miss Juliette Engel, who I don't know from Adam, I don't know what denomination she is, if she is any. You know,
or Eve.
She came right in and she goes, by the way, Mr. Church, before you leave, I could not agree with you more. And she goes, yes, finally someone pointed the finger where it needs to be. It is on the men. Yes. So I think women, when they hear this, when they hear it sincerely, not, you know, not chauvinistically or a masochist or we're all macho women, when they hear it sincerely, they respond to it positively. They say, yes, that's correct.
Absolutely. And that's why, you know, again, I'm not wasting my time, you know, criticizing the magisterium, the Pope, the bishops, the priests. It's just a, you know, it's a rabbit's hole. And I tell you what, because who failed? It's Christian manhood's failed. Christian manhood's job is to create a new Christendom. And again, that's where the crux is. I mean, you know, all your listeners know, go out there and try to lead that family. Try to really take full accountability for them, and you'll have everybody in the church against you. And that includes traditionalists. We talked about that last time.
Yep.
Because, and that's why we go into this Mass here, because if it is all about the Mass, and that is the spirituality, is the kind of reformational spirituality that comes up to us even today in conservative traditional circles, and even in Novus Ordo, it's all about the Mass. If it's all about the Mass, then it's all about the priest. But it's not all about the priest, but it's not all about the Mass. And that's why we have to look at this theologically and challenge these assumptions that we have. And again, it's theologically correct. Can I read to you?
Yeah, please do.
And let me say, by the way, this one before I do that, let me say, when we talk about our rights and individuality, you know, and that can sound like secular humanism, but what it's not, no, it's not. We have, and you know, this is Fauci. This is the whole state apparatus, okay? We have, as Christians, the absolute right to do our duty to God, to follow natural law, and divine inspiration. And if you do that, I promise you will be in trouble, and they will try to kill you because you are public enemy number one. So, yes, we are public enemy number one. You must accept that fact. You're not going to get applause. You can be seen as a criminal. But let me tell you what. So let's go back, though, to this has to go down to the very fact of what the Mass is and what the priesthood is.
Okay.
The Mass and priesthood were instituted by our Lord Jesus Christ, not because he needed to. He died on the cross for us, and we know that he has infinite sufficiency, as the Council of Trent says. But he did that for our own sakes. It was pure gift. He squandered himself. He said, here, yes, eat my flesh and blood. I'm going to give it to you like candy in the form of bread, under the appearance of bread and wine. It's like candy. He squanders himself to us. He's not doing that so we have something else to worship. It was purely for our own sakes. So maybe can I read this first paragraph here of chapter 14 of Crucial Christianity on the Holy Sacrifice of the Mass. The Holy Sacrifice of the Mass derives completely from and is a manifestation of the Holy Sacrifice of the Cross and adds nothing to the sufficiency or appeasing properties of the sacrifice of the cross. The Father is infinitely appeased by that, by Christ. So it doesn't matter how much Gregorian chant you have, how much, you know, bells and whistles, smoke and incense. It's that sacrifice of Christ that is efficacious. But what do we have to do with the liturgy? What's the whole point of it? It's about us and evoking in us the proper spirit, which is a broken spirit and contrite heart. So our Lord gave us this Mass so that we can enter into the moment of the sacrifice of the cross, so we can better dispose our hearts and draw on the efficacy, be broken at the foot of the cross, and then we go and we can live it out. And in the home, because you and I know, and every one of your listeners knows, those darkest times, those times that try our souls, is in the home. It's with our own family. We all know that. And that's as us, as Catholic men, we know how broken we are. We know what failures we are. And if we don't say yes to the Holy Sacrifice of the Cross and embrace that, and then for love of God, for love of our wives, for love of our families, do what we have to do anyway, we will never be able to lead that family as true Christian patriarchs, priests, prophets, and kings.
Dr. G.C. Dilsaver on the Skype Maker Hotline here with us. We are following up on a previous episode, Crucial Christianity here. That's episode number 9. And here's the title that I gave it. The fathers who say Mass must not be the fathers who say blessing at the family's dinner.
And that's a practical situation. You see that, you know, probably Mike, and you've come back to, Catholicism, later in your life, but you notice, okay, what do you do now? So Father's here. Oh, Father, take my seat, at the head of the table. No, he didn't sit. I sit at the head of the table. I say the Angelus before, meals. I say, I say the blessing. Before Father leaves, I'll kneel for a blessing. I'm all, I can use all the blessings I get. But no, I am the one that leads the family in prayer, not the priest. He doesn't lead my family. And this is in practicality, in traditional circles. And this comes from the Fraternity of St. Peter and the Society of Pius X, and Institutes of Christ the King. And I've heard this throughout. They will tell families and fathers that they actually are the ones responsible for their families. They want to assert themselves as the alpha males. It's an ego trip. It's narcissism. It's clericalism. And that is what has led to all the clerical abuses throughout from liberal to conservative to traditionalist throughout the church. And now we have to remand and say, no, the priest is there to serve the families. And he's there to minister unto us as we go out there, do battle, leading the way, leading the charge. When we lay there bleeding, by the grace of Almighty God, may I have a priest there to, give me extreme unction, to give me that sacramental confession, give me the Blessed Sacrament, Viaticum. Yeah, of course, that's God's great gift. It's a signal grace of salvation for Catholics to have those last rites. Amen. But they're ministering unto us. They're not there to lead the charge. That is turning everything upside down. Catholics, men, have to be the ones to stand up and lead those families on the grassroots level, and that's decentralization, which is so essential socio-politically now, We remand it back to the grassroots, you know, to the county, and even less than the county, to the neighborhood, even less than that, to the family, and even ecclesially. Again, the Pope today is less important than ever. So let's not have our hair on fire about Pope Francis. Dogma's been defined. There's nothing I'm looking for him to tell me, you know, and I sure don't want him to tell me about vaccinations or immigration. He has zero competency in that regard. And the whole, and Crucis Christianae explicates very clearly how the magisterium usurped the authority of lay Catholics. They usurped the authority and they emasculated it. This is Catholicism that did this. It wasn't just the state. Catholicism in conjunction with the state. They emasculated Catholicism ever since Charlemagne and the magisterium took over that role, and they ran Christendom into the ground. And they continue to do so right now. So unless Catholic men stand up, take responsibility for the families, and it's not about Catholic men, though, unless they gain this devotion to their wives and to their families, and a devotion is so strong, so powerful, love is so perfect that they're willing to annihilate themselves, accept humiliations and sorrows for love of that family, even if that family turns against them, God forbid.
Dr. Dilsaver's book, Crucial Christianae, is available in the Founders Trading Post store at shop.mikechurch.com. That's shop.mikechurch.com. We see this. There's a microcosm of this that we all should be familiar with, because all of us have homes. You're living in a home, and especially if you're in a home at, where there's marriage, and there are children, well, then you have the perfect example right there. So then you should be able to see this in your own life. Outside of that, though, what you're saying about the family as the simple or the single unit as the most important one, this is something that no government could, if you had brave and courageous men, that no government could put an end to.
Exactly right, because it's grassroots.
Right. This is the simplest form of grassroots here. Everyone ought to be able to understand it.
Yes, absolutely right. This is what we call, in the Marine Corps, actually, it's a Marine Corps concept of this third and fourth generational warfare, because it's about right today, and I think you mentioned this as well. This is war, and you came saying that this is World War III, and it's a never ending war. It's going to be a never ending war. We're in World War III, and it's going to be the only way you're going to oppose that. The only way you're going to fight is through guerrilla warfare. When you're being threatened, when your family's being threatened, and again, we're not talking about overthrowing anything, man. All we're talking about is truly just war, which is what, as St. Augustine explicated as a Catholic principle, just war is when I push back against an unjust aggressor. When they're trying to harm my family. No, not some concept of, weapons of mass destruction or Afghanistan or Iraq. No, when they're threatening my family, that is what we have to do. Maybe it's very simple, but you know what? It's easier to think about fighting Afghanistan, because when I have to defend my family, dear God, I tell you what, that's real personal, up close and personal, man, and that hurts.
There's a question for you in the chat room. This is a good one, too. All right, are you ready? Because you're going to have to get all your teeth and sink deep into this one. So Cuzzy67, who I actually know by her real name, I won't give it out. My question to the doctor, what does a wife do when the head of the household has this much desire to get on board with any of this?
0.0.
What say ye?
So, that's right. That's a good question, Agent 67. What was it, Agency? Is it
Cuzzy, Cuzzy 67.
Cuzzy, okay. This wife, and this is, yes, you know what? And let me just say something right now, and God bless you, 67, because, women, I'm sure they're not going to blame the women. I'm not going to blame feminism. Women are the ones that, we can say this, if it's politically correct or not, I'm not really quite sure, but I sure like women a lot more than I like men, okay? So, and they're a lot closer to this, because why? Why is she concerned with it? Because a woman's concern is for her family. She doesn't compartmentalize. She doesn't want him threatened. The husbands, though, there's a problem in again, in Christian spirituality, these men have to be challenged man to man. And you're not going to say, it's not even going to be through pious things. And again, it's not going to be saying, let's go to Mass more often, let's say the rosary more often. That's not the way it works for men. You're going to say, listen, I'm challenging you. I'm challenging your manhood. You're failing, and you're not defending your family, and you're afraid to take responsibility. And this is exactly what they are. If now this guy, I don't know the issue, but if he's Catholic, for instance, so here's an example. Let me use a hypothetical example of a man. He says, "Well, you know, Doc, I don't like this. I want the priest. You know, the priests. You know, I'm happy just to go to Mass and let the priest run. I don't want to do this myself. I feel like I'm being arrogant or I'm being prideful." No, you are being arrogant and prideful because you don't want to take responsibility. You don't want to take it upon you don't want to accept accountability, as we said in the Marine Corps, because if you do, man, your pride's on the line, buddy. And I guarantee you, if your pride's on the line in this battle, it's going to be annihilated. So you, in your pride, do not want to take responsibility for defending your family because you're a coward. And what is a coward? What is a coward? Let's put this in psychomoralytic terms.
Okay.
Coward is somebody that loves himself more than he loves his family or his God.
Good definition.
Faith. That's right. It's based on pride and self-love. They're afraid because they don't want to annihilate themselves for love of their family, love of Christ. But perfect love casts out all fear.
Now, okay, but what does she do beyond prayer? I guess prayer is it.
Well, so the feminine charism being this is, again, we go back to psychomoralytics, or celebrating God-given gender, another book I think you have in the Trading Post. I don't know if you do, but celebrating God-given gender. It's also on Amazon, unfortunately. But we go in there. What is the feminine charism? It's receptivity. And this is also the creaturely charism. It's the perfect creaturely charism for all of us, men as well. But the feminine charism is pure receptivity. It's piercing of the heart. Suffering well, allowing that piercing. But when you pierce your heart, that's not passivity. A woman must learn not to be afraid of her own rejection and humiliation. She witnesses to the truth by not being manipulated by a husband that wants to do things contrary to Christ, even omission of Christ. She has the duty. If he fails, then she must do what she can, but always in a feminine way, and that means by suffering well. And of course, the Blessed Mother is an example of that, allowing the heart to be pierced.
Right, that's right.
She can witness to that husband, though, by saying, I'm not going to be manipulated by you. You may not like me for this, but I do, and I'm sorrowful. I'm sorrowful that you have been so emasculated. I'm sorrowful. Because, Mike, remember, and we talked about this going way back 25 years ago,
right?
Three marks of manhood. What's a man's greatness dependent upon? What's the greatness of spirit dependent upon? Magnanimity, that's greatness of spirit. What's it dependent upon? The cause he espouses, the cause he lives for, the cause he dies for. And for us as Christian men, our cause is faith and family. And so if he's not doing that, he is not being a man.
So do we abduct this guy and give him a Marine blanket party?
Yeah, you know, that would be great. You know? Yeah, absolutely. And because that's true, because ultimately it's going to have to be a man-to-man challenge. In his face, man-to-man. And, you know, guys, if he's at a parish, someone's got to confirm at a parish after Mass. It's not the priest. Because the priest doesn't do that. The priest is not his job. We want the priest to be there for everybody, so he can't make enemies. But if you confront this guy, you know, he might want to punch you in the nose. He'll either be your enemy, or he's gonna become your best buddy. So let me tell you about blanket parties in the Marine Corps. In the old Corps, and I was kind of in between halfway. Today there's no more Marine Corps, right? May rest in peace. But the old Corps, if you had a private there that had an attitude problem in your infantry platoon there. So and I was a lieutenant in infantry. You go there and you say, "Hey, Sergeant, Private so-and-so, you know, he needs a little private talking to you." So you go out behind the barracks, and Sergeant goes, "Hey, man, hey, Private, all right, let's take your rank off here, man. You got a problem, dude, right?" And so they have it out. And so the sergeant, being a seasoned warrior, knocks the living daylights out of the guy. And then guess what? The private comes back, and all of a sudden they bond in brotherhood of spirit corps. And you want privates with attitude. Why? Because those are the guys that are the good warriors. So you need that. That's a process. But it gets messy and it gets bloody. And that's what it has to be for men. Man-to-man confrontation.
There's a scene in the movie, or it's a series of scenes in the movie, Coast Guard, with Ashton Kutcher and Kevin Costner. And Kutcher is the guy you're describing. He's going to be an awesome Coast Guardman, but he's a freaking jerk. And he's an arrogant me jerk. Costner goes like, okay, that's it. I'm done with you. And then Costner puts him, remember this, Maggie? Costner puts him through this series of, and he punishes the whole platoon. He says, because of him, I'm going to, and of course they all want to kick his ass, right? But that's how he ultimately becomes a member of the squad. The Guardian, right. I said Coast Guard. The movie's The Guardian. But that's how they ultimately get him into the unit and make him a part of the unit, is that the men react. Go ahead.
Well, I'm saying, and let me just make an aside comment here. When people tell me they serve in the Coast Guard or the Air Force, I always say, oh, okay, well, so you didn't do any military service. That's okay. But listen. But, all right. So, former Marine.
Hey, Semper Fi, Coast Guard, Semper Paratus. I mean.
Yeah, that's a ripoff. So anyway, and we want to get beyond, again, we mentioned this before to you. We say, well, let's look at the Marine Corps. No, the few and the proud. No, we're not looking for the few and the proud. We're looking for the weak and the foolish, those unafraid of their wretchedness. And so we're going to really explicate. I'm explicating it in this new book that'll be coming out here in a few months, but how true Christian manhood, the true Christian warrior, is someone whose pride and self-love is not an engine of his heroics at all. It's not. It can't be part of it. He is a man that is willing, is unafraid of his own humiliation and self-abnegation, his own degradation. He's a man that's willing to be seen as a criminal, be rejected by everybody, and again, God forbid, even by his own family, for love of that family. Think about that.
Okay, get Dr. Dilsaver's books. We have Crucial Christianity, and what's the title of the gender book?
Celebrating God-Given Gender.
Yeah, and we also have Three Marks of Manhood, shop.mikechurch.com, shop.mikechurch.com.
And you can also access everything on dilsaver.org.
Soul Deep Science.
Yeah. Dillsaver.org has links for Soul Deep Science, links for NewChristendom.org, the books. So Dillsaver has, all my essays from way back when, and so you can see everything right there. And if you want to, there it is. I'm guilty. All right. It's right there for everybody to see how guilty I am.
One more thing on this subject here, because it's a tender subject, but at the same time, this might be the most important subject that you and I have talked about, because there are a lot of, I'm using this in air finger quotation marks, Shannon's not there to correct me, there are a lot of men out there that are faggots, okay? They're effeminate little dweebs. They have gotten away with this in adult life because women have done the heavy lifting for them. Now, I don't know how to drag these guys back in without their free will going along with it. But I do know this. I do know this. There is, I know a gal. I know a girl. You know her too. There is a gal that can do it, though. You can't do it. I can't do it. Dr. Dilsaver can't do it. She can. So can he. So my advice to Cuzzy and to Ashley and all of you other ladies in the chat room, go to Ite Ad Yosef. Go to Joseph. Do a daily devotion to St. Joseph. Look up the St. Joseph prayer. Start leaving copies of it around your house. Maybe your husband will pick it up. From St. Bernardine of Siena. It's one of the best. It's short. It's a beautiful little prayer. I say it every morning and every night. Ite ad Joseph. Go to Joseph and then go to Mary. And be specific. I always tell people when they ask me, King, dude, how did you, Mike, how'd you do that? And I'm like, look, I'm not a sage of any sort. Please don't ask me questions like that. The only thing I can tell you is that if you want something from our Blessed Mother, this includes all of you Protestants and evangelicals out there, you can go to her too. If you want something and you go to her, go to the Queen, be excruciatingly specific. You have to actually say, you can't give a giant abstract, I want to save the world, or I want to save the family. I want him to go to Mass with me, for example. I want him to lead the blessing. Just be specific. Give her, because if you give her a task and you're devoted to it, she will make it happen.
So let me say this for those non-Catholic Christians or those Catholics that don't have a devotion to Blessed Mother. So this scriptural reference there. So Jesus says, you know, he's not ready to start his public ministry. He's at the wedding of Canaan. You know, he's hanging out there. I don't know if Jesus hanged, you know, hung on the cross. But so our Blessed Mother said, Jesus, they have no wine. Okay, and he's going like, okay, he knows exactly what he wants. He wants some, you know, he wants to pull out of his hat. Here's some wine. You know, so it's you know, she expects it. And he goes, Mother, what's that to you and me? This is not my hour. But it wasn't his hour. He's not lying. He's serious. It wasn't his hour. But, oh, Mom wants it. Blessed Mother wanted it. He did it. And even going against God's timing for the Blessed Mother. There's your example right there. So she does do that. And you go to our Blessed Mother and you have that devotion to her. And St. Joseph, yes, the Holy Family is our example. And you have to have that devotion. And it's so important. Now, and also for women, and this is why it's important for them. What 67 can do is she has to live her charism out more purely and intensely, like the Blessed Mother. And again, we explicate this in celebrating God-given gender, the feminine charism, what it means. So she should be more feminine in the way she dresses, in the way she acts.
Wow, good advice, ladies. Pay attention, ladies. It's good advice. Continue, please.
Because all these men's movements, and this is not about a man's movement. It's not about men at all. It's about the woman. It's about that wife. It's about devotion to the feminine. It's about devotion to the family, the innocent, and the pure and the good. That's why we go out and do anything as men, for love of that. That's why we don't engage. That's why I say, don't engage in, you don't risk your life for anything. Not for thrills, for heaven's sakes. You don't do any of that. The only reason you risk your life is for that family and for the faith. That's why you do it. And so women, be more feminine. See what it means. Celebrate your gender. Celebrating God-given gender, that's why it's named that. Celebrate your femininity, because you are a witness to the world of natural and divine law just by the way you dress, just by the way you act. It's a beautiful prayer. A woman is a prayer. She's something, if you don't have the devotion to the feminine, you have no civilization on the natural level, much less on the Christian level.
Now, finally, when we got to go, I got a long drive and I got to get on the road. Finally, for you, some people are now saying, okay, Dr. Dilsaver, reverse that. What if it's the husband that's got a wife who is the obstinate one? Same, I'd say the answer is the same, correct?
It is. It's an interesting dynamic, though, because you know, I have an example, you know, of these cases. For instance, you know, I have a husband that wants to lead the family, and the wife, and he wants to ramp up their holy faith in that family and really be countercultural, and the wife balks at it. This is usually something after marriage, right? Because, you know, with the husband goes to conversion and the wife doesn't. So, of course, the answer, first off, before you get married, courtship's all about a man explicating his vision in Christ to that woman. And then she says, yes, I want to be on board with that. I want to be part of that and make it come to life for you. That's what courtship's all about. But if that doesn't happen, happens later in marriage, then that husband has to have the courage. And this is what it comes down to. The ultimate is this. And this has happened many times. The wife will threaten to leave the husband.
Mm.
So what's he to do? Oh, well, I can't allow that to happen, so I have to capitulate. No. And I've seen this happen. I've seen it played out over years. I've seen what happens to those families. If he capitulates, because I have to keep the family together. I can't allow this to happen. If he capitulates, evil will fester in that family. He has to have the courage. And this, you know, this is horrendous because there's nothing as deep of a cut as a wife leaving a husband, the disloyalty, the pain there. It's the deepest possible cut. And this is that man's abnegation. But he has to say, I'm leading this family. If you leave it, that's on your head. That's your sin. I will follow Christ. And our Lord Jesus Christ said that. I have come to bring the sword. That means, yes. If that means your wife leaving you, or your husband leaving you, or your children, God, you cannot betray the holy faith. And that man must lead no matter what. And if he does so, he will be blessed. If he doesn't do so, his children, you will see the evil fester in that family and erupt in 20 years. That will be an unmitigated evil, be it, you know, total rejection of the holy faith, you know, perversity, all sorts of things. I've seen this clinically happen. But if a man is true to the holy faith, what happens? And studies show that the children of a father who stands up for the faith and is strong and has a wife who opposes him, that is the best indicator of those children being more faithful in their Christianity. That's very paradoxical, but it's true, because that man shows he's militant. He's not willing to back down for anybody or anything. He loves Christ more than he loves anybody else in the world. And by the way, women, that's the kind of man you want to marry. Not someone who loves you more than anybody else. Not somebody who's head over heels in love with you. Somebody who's head and heels in love with Christ, because that kind of man will always be faithful.
Man, you get him fired up, Dr. Tilsinger. He gets this once a month thing. He gets you guys rare. And that's good. You need to be provoked. You need to be challenged. And there's one of our guests that challenges you guys and gals every month. And that's why we love him. That's why we have him back. Get his books, Crucial Christianity, Three Marks of Manhood, and Made This Way, and the Founders Trading Post, shop.mikechurch.com. His website is Dillsaver with an I, Dill, one L, dillsaver.org. And if you're interested in, you can also, if you could get your husband or your wife, he does individual counseling too. I mean, you do have the whole psychomoralytics thing going. You can actually book an appointment over Skype. So you can get your husband or your wife to sit down for half an hour with him. Where would you suggest they would go for that? Go to Soul Deep Science?
SoulDeepScience.com. Yeah, you can book it right there. And, you know, that's, you know, video conferencing, we have a different program than Skype, but
okay.
It's a little more private. But the video conferencing is good. You know, however, you know, again, when you're challenging a man, it's usually you put yourself on the line. You put your nose on the line too, right? Because that's how it is. Man to man. So, you know, a lot of times, you know, they may want to swing at you, and, you know, so be it, you know. But, you know, when you're video conferencing, it takes a little less of that. So, again, we like to get retreats going, you know, men's retreats. We have, you know, we have them going all over the country, little places here and there, sometimes as families, sometimes as parishes. So you can also book that. We'll come out there, and we'll light some fires right there in your local parish, your local community. And then you have it, because you need that close proximity. Men need that. You got to say, you know what, you know, I'm willing to put my body on the line, my nose on the line. I'm willing to, you know, if you're going to swing at me. But because more than that, it's a challenge to their pride. And that's what it's always about. The pride is what stops us from being courageous. The pride is what stops us from loving God. The pride is what causes us to be cowards.
All right, Dr. Dillsaver, this will be Crucial Christianity, episode number 10. That you will be able to download free of charge for anyone that wants to watch it, because it's important, or who wants to listen to it, at crusadechannel.com. Put May 6th, 7th, and 8th on your calendar, 2022.
All right.
So you can come to the next Congress. So I'm inviting you. I'm inviting you now.
All right. You got some pork cracklings for me?
Brother, whatever you want to eat, we got.
All right, man.
Lent will be over, so it'll be a full-on coon-ass Cajun fest. Don't worry.
Okay.
May 6th, 7th, and 8th.
Okay.
Okay. Awesome. All right. All right, Dr. Jill Saver, thank you so much. Appreciate the time. Good talk. Really good talk.
Godspeed and travels.
All right. Thank you very much. All right. We'll talk soon.